recently on this program, we talked about three city councillors banding together to call on the province to scrap the drug decriminalization program. Linda Annis in Surrey, Alexa Liu in Richmond, and Daniel Fontaine in New Westminster. Those three city councillors have vowed to bring motions to their respective city councils to formally call on the province to end the pilot project. Now, BC is just over a year into its three-year pilot, which decriminalized the possession of up to 2.5 grams of several common street drugs. The initiative operates with an exemption to federal drug laws granted by Health Canada. Now, Daniel Fontaine was on this show recently talking about drug decriminalization and the impact on his community. Let's take a listen to his comments.
If you talk to anybody, they will tell you that this is a failed experiment on almost every count. We have our death rates of opioid overdoses are at record levels. We have, you know, story after story of people using illicit drugs, crystal meth and Tim Hortons. We have, staff at the local Royal Columbian Hospital having to deal with people smoking illicit drugs in their room. I mean, it goes on and on. And at some point, Jazz, the adults have to come back into the room, and we need to vocalize to the province that this is not manifesting itself well in urban centers like New Westminster and other communities. And that's why the time has come for us to say it's time to put an end to this experiment.
That was Daniel Fontaine, a city councillor in New Westminster. And as I said, he was also joined by Alexa Liu in Richmond, Linda Annis in Surrey. Now a fourth councillor, this time Ahmed Youssef, who's a Maple Ridge city councillor, also plans to bring forward a motion to his city council as well. And he joins us now. Ahmed, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Give me a sense of what you're seeing in Maple Ridge when it comes to drug decriminalization. What are you seeing in on your streets, in your playgrounds? What are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing the same thing that many municipalities are seeing across the province. We're seeing drug use in the open. We're seeing blatant disregard for public safety, which I believe is not and should not ever be a partisan issue or a political football. These are real people who are shutting down real businesses because of the real overwhelming pressures directly related to the decriminalization and open drug use policies. I take this opportunity to commend Minister of Public Safety and Solicitor General for his stance and for speaking against the recent video that was mentioned earlier of a guy smoking crack at Tim Hortons with a table of elderly ladies right behind him. These policies, when they were first proposed, we all heard the advocates talk about them as being evidence-based. Those of us who opposed them did not need the experiment or to experiment with people's lives to know what the outcome would be. Human behavior is rather clear. And today, the evidence from jurisdictions around the world, not just within our own province, clearly demonstrate that these are failed policies. Oregon recently pulled the pin on a similar policy. I hope that this will resonate with our different levels of government and they will listen to us now. It's really disheartening when municipal government representatives of these policies that oppose these policies are not being listened to. Our voices are not being heard, not just us, but even at a provincial level. We have Mr. Falcon of the BC United Party, who's been highlighting the same for over a year, yet the government simply does not listen.
I mean,
we need
I'm curious.
Treatment on demand, and we need the other essential pillars of the treatment to get people out of the grips of addictions.
Okay, Ahmed, just for a moment, hang on just for a second, Ahmed. Sorry. We're a year into this. This is a three-year program. Could this program be tweaked, you think, or changes made, even significant changes made, where we can still move forward? Or do you?
Absolutely,
or do you
want that's what I was getting to, is that we need the other essential pillars. Decriminalization without education and a clear and immediate path to treatment and sobriety is like calling a bowl of hot water chicken noodle soup. This is what we've been getting for the last year. And we need not go through two more years of this to know what the outcome will be.
So just want
we
to confirm.
Can learn from,
yeah,
sorry, go
but
ahead.
Just want to confirm, you still think you can tweak this program and still continue with it as long as there is enforcement and treatment centers that are there? Or are you saying that we just need to scrap it outright? I just want to clarify that.
I've spoken to both sides, honestly. When they were first being brought in, I was and continue to be opposed to it. But now that we're this far into it, I'm not going to try to go back in time. I will look ahead and move ahead. When I'm looking at these drug users, I'm looking at them as people. They're someone's kid, father, mother, or sister. They don't want to live in this life that they're stuck in. It's called the grips of addiction, not the liberation of addiction. It's called addiction, not freedom. The warehousing of unhoused addicts has killed 22 people just in Maple Ridge and the modulars, just right here in Little Maple Ridge. That's data. That's true information. We need the treatment on demand. We need the other pillars. We need to give people a path to sobriety. Drug use, I see it on our streets every day and in the streets of other municipalities. Mm-hmm. It's like playing Russian roulette because we don't know what the content of those drugs are or how potent they are. If we as a society are witnessing someone playing Russian roulette, do we give that person more bullets or do we take the gun out of their hand? Which is the more compassionate route?
I got your point, Dharamit, but I'm curious. You're saying, look, you're willing to sort of meet the provincial government halfway in regards to this if there are more treatment centers and there's greater enforcement. The reality is treatment centers take time, they take dollars. These things don't happen quickly. I don't think it's going to happen that fast. So are you still willing to stick with this program or do you think we just scrap it? Because I don't think the treatment centers are going to be built fast enough at this point.
I'm going to beg to differ with you on this point. Because we have facilities that have been built over the last few years. We have existing facilities that can easily be converted into treatment centers if we change the philosophy and the approach to the drug addiction epidemic that we're facing. We declared it as a health crisis. When we declared COVID as a health crisis, look at how we mobilized all of our resources to combat it. Why are we not doing the same for drug use? We can do it. We have the facilities. We have the ability to do so. A lot of the low barrier facilities that are in existence right now can easily change and be changed into facilities that offer treatment, detox, and second stage housing. We need not reinvent the wheel. We already have the infrastructure in place. It really, truly is about changing the philosophy and approach. And if the provincial government is able to do that and pivot away from this continuing to supply the bullets for the Russian roulette game, then we can really save a lot of lives, not just on our streets, but we can save livelihoods as well from the businesses that are suffering from these pressures.
And when will you be introducing this motion? Is it next week?
So I've already submitted the text of the motion to our legislative clerk. I've received confirmation that the notice of motion will be served to mayor and council on May 14th. And then, of course, 2 weeks after at our next council meeting is when we will debate and vote on the motion to write a letter to the provincial government imploring and calling on them to stop this policy of that's just killing our people.
Ahmed, as always, sir, thank you for your time.
Appreciate the opportunity. Truly my pleasure.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.